For this is all a dream we dreamed one afternoon long ago. Seems possible, doesn't it? But so much of the time, it seems more like a nightmare than a dream. Like a bad trip, and we're all experiencing it together. Maybe we're trying to cope with something that someone did to us a long time ago. Something we really, really resent. Or maybe we're trying to make up for something that we did a long time ago. Something we feel really, really ashamed about. Well, you know what? Whichever one it is, or whatever, you know, might have happened in the past, get over it. Move on. Don't keep on living in the past, because you can't change what's already happened. Concentrate on what's happening right now, today. Think about what you can do to turn this around. Let's make it into a good trip, a good ride, as our friend Bill Hicks would have said. But I'm not going to cut to Bill Hicks this week. I've got some more things to talk about. First, I'd like to recommend a really good movie that Lorraine and I watched this morning. It's from 2008, called The Black Balloon. It's available on Netflix for streaming. Just an amazing movie. It's about a family in Australia with an autistic teenager. This kid doesn't talk. He does some signing. And oh, does he ever act out? He acts out just about anything he feels. Makes life a bit difficult for his brother, his parents. Well, you can't imagine some of the things he gets up to. The movie is funny and sad. But most importantly, there are a lot of really cool people, only a few crap ones, and I just really highly recommend it. The Black Balloon. Now I want to talk about the funding situation for the New American Dream Radio Show. Mike and I don't make anything from this show. In fact, when we're short of sponsors, like this month, we end up putting in the money ourselves to keep it going. We'd really like to get some help. So I've created a crowdsourcing project over at Indiegogo.com, and we hope to raise enough to pay ahead for this whole year. That way we can focus on the content and not have to worry about where the payments are going to come from to keep it going. Not a lot of money. We're looking for $1,500 total. That'll cover the Blog Talk Radio subscription, the high-speed internet and phone that I need to run the studio, and the phone that Mike uses for his part for the whole year. We're not looking to get paid for the website work or the scripts or the scheduling and management of guests and all that other stuff. We just want some help with the basics. If you can help us out, visit Indiegogo.com/projects/307282. And that link's on our website, theshow.newamericandream.info. So you can just go to our website and then click on the link. Everybody that kicks in a little bit will be entered into a drawing. And at the end of this fundraising thing, somebody's going to win the Mike Palachek book of their choice. I bet we can even get him to autograph it for you. Those who put in at least $20 will get their name read on the air as part of our thank you to listeners. That'll be on the February 28th show. Whether you decide to show out some of your hard-earned bucks or not, we thank all of you for listening to our show. Okay, that's it. That's the sales pitch. Hate doing that stuff. So I think it's time to do what I was said at the beginning, let's move on. Here's my good friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Chuck, tonight we welcome special guests June Ahern and Jim Fetzer. Jim has been on once before as a guest. He's going to now take over a monthly columnist slot, similar to what we have with Sherwood Ross. And so tonight we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, the coast of California, Madison, Wisconsin, Duluth, and wherever you are. Zero Dark Thirty, the new blockbuster American movie showing everywhere, nominated for Academy Awards. Well, we have lots of American actors who should be nominated for Academy Awards. That guy who was shown on TV wearing the Harley shirt in the street in New York City, saying the buildings fell down due to jet fuel. The father of the Sandy Hook child with a big smile on his face until the director said lights, camera, action. George Bush, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, all excellent actors. How about the actors reading the nightly news or the ones we listened to on TV on the morning of September 11, 2001? Award-winning performances all, I would say. Well, let's see. The New American Dream, what's this all about? The most profound events in the history of mankind are the faking of the moon landings, the CIA overthrows of governments around the world, the murders of JFK, RFK, MLK, Malcolm, OKC, Waco, the control of the media, the whole subversive takeover of the U.S. in the spirit of the Soviet Union. While unlike the people of the Soviet Union, we Americans still believe we are free. All this is more profound than anything else in world history ever. Some say it's goofy, this stuff, not real conspiracy stuff, and yeah, I'll give you that. It can appear that way. But it's goofy only if you don't read anything. I suppose it's goofy sounding if your sense of reality comes from American Idol, Today's Best Kitchen, America's Biggest Hamburger, Ryan Williams, Katie Couric, Bill O'Reilly, Jim Lehrer. That's the way it was when I was a kid. We watched Gunsmoke, Bewitched, My Favorite Martian, The Flying Nun, Gilligan's Island, and thought that was all we needed to know. But when they told us Lee Harvey Oswald killed JFK, then James Earl Ray killed Martin Luther King, and Sirhan killed RFK, we said, okay, and then went into the kitchen for an ice cream refill. My final realization about what this country is really about, what it has become, is when they ruled that Bush won the election by stopping the counting of votes. It's the same year I ran for Congress in Iowa in the Democratic Party. I realized, of course, they killed the Kennedys then. They can do anything they want. And you can say that's conspiracy tinfoil to think like that about the Bushes and the assassinations and such. But I say it's just paying attention. Then there's the Obama election, believing in hope with a capital H, openness, no wrong questions, truth with a capital T, becoming the type of people, nation we always thought we were. It didn't happen, and we have to ask ourselves why. It's one of those questions that we are allowed to ask, that we should ask. You have to know that Barack Obama knows the whole truth about the 9/11 attacks, and therefore he's complicit. He has lied. He has continued the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere based on a lie, and he knows he's lying. Osama bin Laden was buried at sea, he said. No prosecution of Bush and Cheney. Continue the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, expanding elsewhere. Nobel Peace Prize winner, leading actor in a political role. For what reason has he acted this way? Who knows? Some say his first job out of college was with the CIA. Do you ever leave the CIA? Ask William Buckley or Peter Matthiessen or Ben Bradley, Bob Woodward. I don't know. But based on Nuremberg or Common Sense or Snoopy and Calvin and Hobbes, Barack Obama is a criminal, just as George Bush and George Bush before him, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, the whole bunch. And yet they go on living their normal lives. It's wrong and it's frustrating. I really believe deep down in this whole thing. To me, to know the truth about our history is the most important thing, period. I think everything else happens after that. If that could happen, I believe the rest takes care of itself, grows legs, as they say. We pay for these lies. Some people struggling with two or three jobs, this lie that the military protects us, this lie that the USA stands for freedom, this lie that it's okay to kill. there is actually a they out there, and there actually is a you and a me. Together we're we. They, Bush, Obama, Clinton, and company, want us to be afraid, as they told us in the anthrax letters in 2001. We can do this, but we cannot be afraid. Back to you, Chuck.
And now, please join us for another exciting episode of Tina Thompson, Taco Bell trainee. Tina began her training a week ago. Tony, the manager, requires each trainee to spend one shift at each of the workstations: counter, ice cream, table cleaning, parking lot patrol, salads, burgers, fries. The final test, one day on the drive-through window.
Tony has a deal with the local movie theater, so the drive-through people have to incorporate a blurb about the latest movies into their greeting.
Good afternoon. Now showing Red Dawn. America is saved from terrorists by a group of gutsy red, white, and blue teenagers in a small Midwestern town. Zero Dark 30. Follow a group of brave Navy SEALs and their amazing mission to kill Osama bin Laden. How may I help you? And then the person orders a number one or number five. The drive-through person asks if they'd like to supersize that. And if they have a coupon in their chubby little fist for one night of the Kill 'Em All video game, they can check it out right now, adding just 99 cents to their order with the coupon. Tina came on at noon. By 2 o'clock, she'd already decided. She took a break, went to the restroom to put in her tongue ring, ruffled her hair, returned to her window. Have you heard about the Americans who sneaked into the nuclear plant in Tennessee last summer, pounded on weapons with hammers, and are now headed for trial? She asked the first car. When they said no, she asked them, you really believe Osama bin Laden was buried at sea? No. He died 10 years ago, the driver said, and all things alive for political purposes, just like Jessica Lynch and WMD and Pat Tillman. The driver's squawky answer echoed out loud back into the Taco Bell. Tina yelled, yeah! He raised a clenched fist, turned inside to the people at the counter. Two old ladies and a young man held up their fists for a moment, just before ordering the number two. Fired up, like beyond belief, Tina turned and addressed her next customer sitting in the blue Camry, where the drive-thru lane snaked around the store, out back by the dumpster. 9/11 was an inside job. They killed Wellstone, Tina told the person. She talked about Iraq, about the drug wars and prisons. People in the line began leaving their vehicles and walking up to the squawk order board window thing instead of waiting so they could hear what Tina was talking about. Little kids from the neighborhood stopped throwing snowballs at cats to wander over and sit in the bushes and listen to the squawk box girl. When a group of men in a pickup wearing orange caps and orange mittens pulled up to her window, Tina told them everything she thought about hunters and hunting. They yelled, flipped her off, squealed the tires. And Tina turned around to see Tony, the manager, standing there. He pointed to the note cards in the window. He asked why she wasn't using them. I didn't want to, she said. Tony nodded, turned, and walked away. The next morning, when Tina arrived for her scheduled shift, the first day of being regular full-time, she didn't know if she still had a job. She stomped her feet on the rug, hung up her coat and back, and saw her photo on the bulletin board. Said assistant manager underneath. Tina found Tony and asked him, what was up with that? You got guts, kid, said Tony. You make us better. You complete us. Here. Tony handed Tina a box of magnetic letters and the ladder and said her first assignment as assistant manager was to go out and change the sign out front. But Tina went and finished the job, backed down the ladder, stepped back a ways to see her work, put her hands on her hips and smiled as she read, over 100,000 tacos served, 99 cents for two soft shells, and not freaking stupid anymore. Join us next week for another episode when we'll hear Tina recommend the Oswald is Innocent Chalupas and the 9/11 Truth Gordita with a medium Pepsi, only $2.39.
This message brought to you by the Foundation for a New American Dream. Did we go to the moon? Maybe, maybe not. Just like Voldemort and so many discussions that are prohibited in America, it is one that cannot be named. Was 9/11 an inside job? Stop! See, like that. We can't talk about that. Was Paul Wellstone assassinated? A roll of the eyes. You are sent to Siberia by your brother, your mother, and your cousin. Disapparated from the Thanksgiving dinner table. Poof! No one can now see you or talk to you. You are a non-person. Might as well go smoke in the garage. Did FDR provoke Pearl Harbor in order to get into World War II? Did the government burn men, women, and children alive at Waco? Was the government involved in the Oklahoma City bombing? Are so-called terror plots and mass murders such as in Aurora, Colorado, Newtown, Connecticut, and dozens of other terrorist events actually engineered by the FBI and CIA, NSA, in order to bring about a zeitgeist of fear and scare Americans into accepting a police state? What the fuck are chemtrails? What does the government know about UFOs? Why does Sirhan not remember anything about the Robert F. Kennedy shooting? Who shot Martin Luther King? James Earl Ray said he did not do it. Evidence says the FBI and others did it. Do those questions have merit or are they preposterous? We will never know because Brian Williams and NBC and Amy Goodman and NPR are afraid of even the question. Why? 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 Did Bush steal the elections of 2000 and 2004? Ask these questions on any mainstream or so-called liberal website or TV show or newspaper or radio show and you will get laughed down. Ask it on the so-called liberal progressive Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart, and they will try to humiliate you. Why? Is it because you are truly so hilariously pathetic? Or is it because they are so, so afraid? The Foundation for a New American Dream, because it's time to wake up. Your toast is ready. The bus is here. The world is on fire.
Anyone who loves a good read of San Francisco's history during the late 1950s and 60s will enjoy June Ahern's novels. She uses the rich history of Eureka Valley, the Castro, by weaving her story around well-known businesses, the Castro Theater, Cliff's Variety Store, Andy's Donuts. The stories are rich with nuances of Scottish culture and language. June Ahern, like her main characters, was born in Glasgow, Scotland, and immigrated to San Francisco in the mid-50s. She grew up in the Castro area, and she writes great novels, and I'm really glad to have her on the show. June, are you there?
I am.
Well, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me, Chuck.
I liked both of your novels. I read The Sky in June first, and I was fascinated by your characterization. I was enjoying the mysticism and sort of magical quality as well. The protagonist who happens to be named June, which seems not quite coincidental.
No.
moves from Scotland to San Francisco. Sounds kind of familiar. How much of your novels is autobiographical?
Well, let me put it this way: the plot is fictional, and as I always say, my father had a better sense of humor than the father in the Jimmy McDonald, and my mother wasn't blonde. But a lot of it is really also about my own abilities. I have particular abilities of being a psychic reader for the last 40 years professionally. And so I took some of that, and I did live in the areas. I lived in Scotland. I lived in the Castro area growing up. So some of it is, it's in a framework. It's a framework of my own experiences, but I also included other people's experiences. And I know you're not supposed to ever name a character after yourself, but, well, I haven't always done what everybody tells me to do.
I think that all the best people tend to refuse to do what people tell them to do.
and I have fun, and then I certainly, as I said, I actually have more siblings than I gave the McDonald family. I reduced the family, and so I just.
My goodness,
added,
wasn't it five in the novel?
Yes, and I have eight, and I have two brothers. My brothers kept saying, "Where am I in the story?"
I can just hear them.
Yes, yeah. And I said, "Well, I think there are some guys in there. Maybe you'll see yourself." But it certainly was fun creating the characters and giving them personalities and statements, life statements for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would really work my characters out. I would go around the house and I would talk. I would have all this dialogue going on. And when I found the right dialogue, then I would write it.
Well, as I said, I found the novel fascinating. And there were great challenges facing June. But then when... you sent me a copy of City of Redemption, I found I liked it even better. And it's the thing that struck me about both books was the complexity of the characters. There are terrible things that have happened. There were bad decisions and bad circumstances and things, you know, just really terrible challenges. And they seem to me stories of redemption. Here I am taking your title, but
I think that's very accurate. When a life-altering experience occurs, when a situation happens, and we're basically on top of our game, we're on top of the world, we're young, we're cocky, like Liz is in my City of Redemption, and
mm-hmm.
she just falls down to the lowest point in life. Her son is kidnapped and murdered, and what's her blame in it? And you can imagine, even in our own lives, when we get to that place where whatever we thought we were is completely turned upside down.
Absolutely.
I think if most people looking at it have experienced that, a really bad time in their life, and is there any way that they can forgive themselves to begin with? I think that's where it has to begin. How do you forgive yourself for making bad choices that impact other people?
Absolutely. The whole San Francisco scene, the Haight-Ashbury experience, really comes to life in your novel. And were you there around that time?
Oh, I was there, and I remember. So I must have been a good girl.
I guess so, really.
I was completely immersed in it. I was grew up in that area, as we said already, you know, in the Castro area. I went to all of the band playing in the park. I went to the Fillmore, the Avalon, you know, all of the places. I heard the great music that everybody talks about now, right there at the beginning of it. And the 60s, we think of it, oftentimes people think of it as kind of a hippy-dippy time, but it was such a powerful rebellion in society, in politics, in against religion, what was set. It was a really powerful time, and there was a lot of darkness that went on there because there was a lot of drugs. You know,
right.
And there's a lot of drugs being sold and a lot of people doing a lot of drugs, and they couldn't handle it.
And perhaps, well, the whole Black Panther connection was equally
I wasn't involved with that, as most white people weren't,
mm-hmm.
You know, privy to any real information. But so I researched it with a woman who's a professor at a college in California. I researched it with her, who was involved with the Black Panthers,
mm-hmm.
an African-American black lady. And so she gave me the information that I needed. You know, how did they feel? What was happening? What was their focus? What, you know, what is it that they were wanting, and what went on behind the scenes? And so I relied upon her to really tell me what was going on in the Black Panthers at that time.
Okay. Demonstrating? What did you do back then?
I was not as actively involved in the demonstration as against the war as I was more on women's rights, you know, marching for the rights of women, you know, kind of the bra burning time. And I wasn't as involved in the late 60s because I was still in my, you know, earlier teens, as I had become in my 70s, where I became more of an active member of demonstrations and political movements at that time. I always say I didn't eat grapes for like 30 years. You know, movement. I was like, oh man, and other people were eating them. So I was very disappointed when I found out that other people were eating grapes that I gave up. I think that if you were at a time in the 60s and you were young but not old, you know, you were in between, you became part of the movement to change society's ways, to change what was going on in the government. So really what's going on now, as we look at what's going on now, where the younger people are more active. You know, since the 60s, I don't think we've seen as much protest as we have in the last couple of years all over the world.
I think that's true. Have you seen any of that, I don't know, live, as it were?
Here in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I have taken part in peace marches. We had about 3 years ago, maybe 3.5, 4, a huge peace march all the way down Market Street into City Hall. And then the news said, well, maybe there was 40,000. It was so packed. We were, you know, in lines all the way across going down Market Street. There was an enormous amount of push here in the Bay Area for people coming from all over. All the BART trains, all the streets, everything was clogged to go to this peace march. And it's been going on, you know, as you know, we have the Occupy. We've had them in downtown San Francisco. We have them in Oakland. And, you know, if you want change, you have to be a part of it. You can't just hope it's going to change.
Exactly.
So, yes, to your question, I'm still active. As a matter of fact, I'm planning on going to a women's right protest at the end of January downtown, you know, in celebration of Roe versus Wade. You know, I'm still active in that, in those roles. I don't think we can let laws slip away. I think we have to be very diligent, you know.
That sounds great. I'm really glad to hear that that Occupy is still alive and
it's not as alive as it had been.
I know.
But that's all right. Things are still working, and that's what the book part of the the plot, of course, is the Black Panthers and City of Redemption.
Yes.
But really, the theme really is about Liz McKay and what's going on with her and how she becomes involved with that in her way of finding how to redeem herself for her role in her son's kidnap and murder.
Yeah. Well, she sure ended up paying a lot before feeling better about things.
Yeah.
I wish we could go on, but we're about out of time. Can you please tell our listeners where they can find your books, where they can find you on the web?
My books are in paperback and ebook. You can get paperback off of me at juneahern.com. And you can also get it on Amazon. You can go to your favorite bookstore. You know, I'm very much a supporter of bookstores. And you can order the book there. So autograph copy through me at your bookstore and also on Amazon. And as I said, it is an ebook. And a lot of people like ebooks. You know, it makes sense now.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining us. Keep on fighting for us out in the community. And I hope you're writing something too, because I'd like to read it.
Well, thank you, Chuck, and thank you for having me on.
All right. Thank you, and have a good night.
Thank you. Bye.
Overseas bases, Germany, Korea, the Philippines, Iraq, Italy, Japan, Afghanistan. Really, what are they for? Greece, Cuba, Spain? No, really, really. Thank you for your service. You guys are great. Yeah, really. Really, man. Nice parade. Cool flags. Hey, can I get me one of them root beer floats? No, really. What do you do? Veterans Day, Armed Forces Day, the 4th of July, Memorial Day, Flag Day. Welcome home, Vietnam Veterans Day, National Day of Honor, Month of the Military Child, Gold Star Wives Day, National Military Appreciation Month, Loyalty Day, Silver Star Service Banner Day, VE Day, VJ Day, Patriot Day, Gold Star Mother's Day, Day of the Deployed, National Military Family Month, Pearl Harbor Day. What more do you guys want? No, really, what are y'all going with this?
Now, we pop in again to visit the ongoing world of We Were Weathermen. Steve and Sally Storm sat silently surveying seashells on the seashore, sailing ships. The ships were sewn cigarette packs and swizzle sticks. But there were no ships, no shells, no seashore. Only the silence was sentient, alive, breathing, real. So, Steve, said Sally, softly, yet sort of seriously. Yeah, what, he said. And that was how the morning went, as it often did. The two married weather persons in their cubicle at the station, dreaming their tropical dreams, each just knowing what the other was dreaming. The two storms did the weather for station WMOKS in St. Joe. Being weather persons was not their first career choice, but was not what Sid Abramowitz and Alicia McCarthy had dreamed of back in their days at Columbia University, sitting in the primary colored chairs in the outer office of the newly founded Tourism Management Department. How did they know? It was only a front for the CIA. That there would be no internship with Hilton of Honolulu or Russian ballet tour group to Tashkent, as the many-colored department brochure had proclaimed. He'd been told by Mr. Phelps, their faculty advisor. They were already a team, a couple, famous on the South Lawn with their long strides, their long yellow hair, strolling hand in hand. They've already been told that as part of the requirements of tourism management major, they would need to become part of one of the local student groups to seek out the individuals in those groups and find out what their likes and interests were in order to more efficiently serve their travel and tourism needs.
Mr. Phelps suggested the weathermen. So Sid and Alicia made bombs in their dorm rooms and the off-campus apartments of the other students in the group after the bars and library had closed. After they completed their papers and turned them in, they were told they needed to go on the internship portion of tourism management, which was a weatherman relocation program, as it were. They would become actual weather persons as part of their graduation requirements, which Alicia Sally was starting to wonder about. Mr. Phelps was so often just a kidder. But even so, they had taken to the job, learned all about fronts and arrows on maps and big dipping lines and alto cumulus clouds and shit.
Their shared cubicle was stacked and packed with various weather props, part of their show, their shtick, their routine. The little doodads helped a lot when they went out to the various schools to do talks about the weather. The giant Scruffy the Lost Tornado Dog, Jimmy the Drowned Duck, all that fun stuff. And they'd come to love the weather. They wanted to call a spade a spade. No weatherman had actually said the words global warming on camera. The word unseasonably was becoming a real problem from overuse. Cliche. The weather is nothing if not current, new, hip. They heard rumblings in the restrooms at various weather conferences held in Amarillo. And after the first usage of global warming, oh, it'd be all over.
Then eventually even the Today Show weathermen would be forced to follow suit, and there would be no more weather. Oh, for a while there would be lots of weather, lots of work, probably even a few new meteorology schools constructed to handle the load. But after the tornadoes and floods and all the rest, all let through by that first utterance of the term, things would settle like water on a lake, and that would be that. All there would be left for the weather persons to do would be to make a brief appearance on camera, make a joke with the hosts at the news desk and the sports guy over there, smile and throw up the hands and say, "Well, folks, it's hot," and then go home. Pretty soon there would be automated graphics packages to do even that tiny bit, and there would be no more need for the jolly, quirky weather guy or the weather girl with the giant boobs. It would be gone, all gone. And it would be the fault of Sid and Alicia, a.k.a. Steve and Sally Storm, who had blown the whistle just as they had ended the revolution. And then where would they go? Where would Mr. Phelps send them now? What requirements were they still lacking for their degrees? Maybe they would be sent to drive the ice cream truck and ring the bell up and down the dirt streets in Valentine, Nebraska, or be grizzly bear hunting guides in southwest Jersey. They wanted to have a family, settle down, but they needed their degrees first. That's the first thing an employer is going to ask. They needed a base, a foundation, some place to start. Sid Steve looked online to try to get information from the Columbia Registrar, but found out he did not exist, had never attended Columbia, had no college credit after how many years?
Well, anyway, show must go on. 5 p.m., just like the sun coming up every morning, Steve and Sally Storm put on their game faces, got ready, and sprang into action. Steve and Sally Storm in their salty, secure, somnolent circle cubicle at the carefully choreographed queue, like synchronized swimmers, pushed back their chairs and their computers, bumping their backs, swiveling around. They stood to high five and trot out to the set. Sapinen! St. Joe! They both screamed when it came their turn, squatting and firing pistol shots with pointed index fingers at the camera. "Hey, hot out there today, huh?" smiled Steve. "Looks like we're in for some weather," Sally smooshed her face up close to the camera. "Unseasonably warm, it looks like," said Steve as he moved to the side. pointed at his map with the big blow-up red and yellow pencil he cuddled in both arms. And Sally handed out red, yellow, and green suckers to the cameramen and the news team. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of We Were Weathermen, where we'll find Steve and Sally Storm preparing a demo to send to the Weather Channel, hoping to host their own show. Hot times in the old town tonight. And buy some Jiffy Pop right now.
Our second guest is Jim Fetzer. Jim Fetzer is a former Marine Corps officer. He's published widely on the theoretical foundation of scientific knowledge, computer science, artificial intelligence, cognitive science, and evolution and mentality. McKnight Professor Emeritus at the University of Minnesota Duluth, he has also conducted extensive research into the assassination of JFK, the events of 9/11, and the plane crash that killed Senator Paul Wellstone. The founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, his latest books include The Evolution of Intelligence, The 9/11 Conspiracy, Render Unto Darwin, and The Place of Probability in Science. We are glad to announce that Jim will be joining us each month as a regular columnist. Welcome, Jim, and please take it away.
Oh, it's a great pleasure to be here. I admire what you're doing beyond words. Excellent, indeed. The weather in relation to gun control and the NRA is blowing, becoming very choppy because of Sandy Hook. But every American ought to be paying attention to what really happened at Sandy Hook. Some of us who have been exploring this event have become controversial in the public eye because we're taking exception to what we've been told, to the official account of Sandy Hook, where a Connecticut state trooper has even warned that those who dispute what he has had to tell us about Sandy Hook might be subjected to prosecution, which sounds very un-American. If you can't question your government, if you can't challenge what we're told, what does it really mean to have freedom of speech or freedom of inquiry? Even though after the Patriot Act, these may become rather tattered and torn notions, where shows like this one are especially important for affording the opportunity for those of us who dissent from our government on a multiplicity of issues have the opportunity to say our piece, share our thoughts, and encourage discussion and debate. When it comes to Sandy Hook, I and another professor, in this case from Florida Atlantic University by the name of James Tracy, have become the targets of criticism by newspapers and other fora for raising questions, for disputing what happened there. And yet, it's not obvious that we are wrong and our critics are right. The facts about Sandy Hook were not obvious from the beginning. They were loaded with inconsistencies. Initially, the suspect, Adam Lanza, was supposed to be a student there. Then he wasn't. His mother was a teacher there. Then she wasn't. Even the principal was reported by the local paper to have called to report about the shooting and hearing lots of shots, but yet she was among the very first who was supposed to have died. The coroner reported all the dead had been shot with a Bushmaster, but then NBC News itself reported four handguns had been found with the body and that the AR-15 had been left in the car. Go to YouTube. Check it out for yourself. Sandy Hook shooting, AR-15 rifle was left in the car. And even if Adam Lanza, who was 20, had done some shooting with his mother, the ratio of kills to targets was fairly astonishing. As a former Marine Corps officer, I qualified with a 45, 4 years in a row. I also supervised recruits of his age in marksmanship training, and I can't see how he could have done it. Remarkably, police radio in real time reported two suspects headed toward the officer calling in, one of whom was apprehended on the spot. The other was tracked into the woods, as police helicopter footage shows. We have no idea what became of them. Not only that, but the mystery has only deepened with the discovery that Eric Holder, our attorney general, met with the governor of Connecticut not long before Sandy Hook to discuss actually on November 27th to unveil Project Longevity, which is going to send more federal grant money to Connecticut, in part to have the community show more outrage about these things like shootings around the country and demand that issues like gun control become a major priority. And now, remarkably enough, on Before It's News website has discovered that the United Way of Western Connecticut was extending its most sincere condolences and prayers to all the families affected by the devastating shooting in Newtown at Sandy Hook on 11 December, which is very much like Jane Stanley of the BBC announcing how Building 7 had collapsed. When Jane Stanley was making that report at 4:57 p.m. and the building itself, which you could actually see over her left shoulder, wouldn't collapse until 5:20, in this case, She was 23 minutes early. In this case, the United Way was 4 days early. The dating appears to be right. Further evidence that what we're encountering here was a staged event. Just exactly what happened isn't entirely clear, but there are a number of us who believe the most likely scenario is that Adam and his mother were actually killed the day before, that his body was picked up by the police. He was put in a SWAT outfit, including body armor, and stored at the school. Then a three-man team entered the school, one being arrested, as the officer described, and put on the lawn. Another went out the back door and appears to have escaped into the woods. But those who were arrested are not in police custody. Their names were never released. A telling sign that we're being told a story that's based on fiction rather than fact. Why should Sandy Hook matter? Why should we care? Well, most Americans don't know it, but the Department of Homeland Security has acquired 1.5 billion, yes, billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammunition, which isn't even permissible in combat under the Geneva Conventions. Not only that, but a subcommittee of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security has issued a report, which was its study of 680 fusion center reports, where fusion centers integrate federal, state, and local anti-terrorism efforts. And based on its study of these reports from 2009 to 2010, they found no evidence of any domestic terrorist activity, none. They found a lot of misallocation of funds. They found a lot of relatively ordinary criminal activity. But when it comes down to the focus of their efforts, terrorist activity, there was none. The absence of any real domestic terrorist threat and the existence of more than 300 FEMA camps, even with special boss cars to carry dissidents to them, has been deliberately withheld from the public. I mean, think about this. Homeland Security has no foreign commitments. Those camps and ammunition, therefore, have to be for domestic consumption. DHS appears to be gearing up to conduct a civil war with the American people, but 80 million armed families stand in the way. What better excuse could there be for banning assault weapons than the slaughter of 20 innocent children? Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, has a gun control proposal that would lead to the confiscation of virtually every semi-automatic weapon in the nation. That's my take on Sandy Hook, but you can read the newspapers and see our Vice President Joe Biden, basically a very good guy, has organized a group to lead proposals for gun control. The problem, I'm afraid, is that other nations have found that when the nations lose their weapons, that the government, tyranny by the government, is allowed to continue unabated. I want to recommend where those who care about these issues can learn more. If they go to Veterans Today on the Internet, There's an article I co-authored with Dennis Camino entitled From America to America, The End Game, in which we discuss the FEMA camps. In another article entitled Fusion and Fear in America, The Non-Existent Terrorist Threat, by John Whitehead, also you can find on Veterans Today, with an introduction that I composed. In Homeland Security, Preparing for Massive Civil War, I republished an article by Paul Joseph Watson and Alexander Higgins and offered additional thoughts for reflection as a framework. About Sandy Hook specifically, James Tracy, the professor from Florida Atlanta whom I mentioned, has a wonderful piece that appeared in Global Research entitled The Sandy Hook Massacre, Unanswered Questions and Missing Information. A piece of mine has been the most read article on Veterans Today for 10 days or more entitled Sandy Hook, Huge Hoax in Anti-Gun PSYOP. Find it there. And most recently, I have published an article by an historian of science from the UK, Nicholas Kollerstrom, who's an expert on the London bombings and the author of Terror on the Tube. You'll find the article by him with my introduction, Sandy Hook, Analogies with the London 7-7 Bombings. I believe Sandy Hook was a false flag operation the government conducted for the purpose of instilling fear into the American people in order to promote a political agenda, just as 9-11 was a similar and controlled event, an actual national security event approved at the highest levels of the American government in order to instill fear into the American people, to manipulate us again to promote a political agenda in that case by transforming our foreign policy from one in which we had never attacked any nation that hadn't attacked us first into an aggressor nation that now took the initiative by attacking first Afghanistan and then Iraq, and then through NATO, of course, Libya, and now we still have ongoing threats against Iran, which is quite preposterous for multiple reasons, including that Iran hasn't attacked any other country for 300 years, that even our own intelligence agencies, 16 of them, concluded in 2007 that Iran was not pursuing a nuclear weapons program, a conclusion they reaffirmed in 2011. Iran has signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iran has allowed inspectors. There is a nuclear menace in the Middle East, but it isn't Iran. It's a country known to have 200 to 600 or more of these little beauties. It's a country that's refused to sign the Non-Proliferation Treaty. It's a country that won't allow inspectors. It's a country that, like the United States, has become known as the greatest aggressor nation in the world. And that country, of course, is our gallant ally in the Middle East, Israel. We must not allow this Sandy Hook event, which appears to be a contrived occurrence in a sequence of escalating violence that's designed to persuade the American public, which I'm sorry to say is entirely too gullible, tends to treat authority as truth instead of truth as authority, into surrendering their Second Amendment rights, which in my judgment are our last bulwark in defense against tyranny by the state in the preservation of our freedom and liberty. Thank you so much.
Jim, thank you very much. We're going to look forward to having you as a part of our team each month, and I really appreciate you for taking the time to do that. And so,
my great
thank
pleasure,
you.
And I look forward to it also, Chuck and Mike. Terrific.
Awesome. Thank you, Jim. Have a good night.
My pleasure.
Occupy Dealey Plaza. That's where it all began. November 22nd, 1963. About 12:30 p.m., 50 years ago this year, on November 22nd, 2013, to fill Dealey Plaza with protesters and signs and singing and speaking. Let them bring their dogs, their cops, their robbers and murderers, their sniper rifles, double secret video cameras and microphones. Occupy Dealey Plaza. We demand a truth commission to replace the Warren Commission and the 9/11 Commission. We want freedom. We want peace. We want real hope and real change.
Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let them know we know what they have done. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let the world know this is America. The New American Dream Radio Show newsroom has received word that the Homeland Security obscene statue removal team, taking part in Operation Bad Guys after they finished the Joe Paterno job at Penn State, has now taken their bulldozers and cranes and chains and torches, ropes and dynamite on 6 flatbed trucks and 4 semi-trucks with lead pickup with lights flashing, headed for the other jobs that will need to be completed before the end of the coming spring and summer. Right now, the caravan is headed for the Ronald Reagan statue at the National Airport in Arlington, Virginia, then on to the George W. Bush statue at Hamilton High School in Hamilton, Ohio. They will then cruise on down to the George H.W. Bush Monument in Houston, Texas, and out to the Black Hills to the Gerald Ford statue in Rapid City, South Dakota. And this just in, plans are underway to take out the Bill Clinton statue in Pristina, Kosovo, and the Barack Obama statue in Jakarta, Indonesia, with drone airplane attacks.
When you go to Walmart, not if, when, you'll find those birthday cards in the birthday card section. Tell all about what was happening during the year you were born. The big political events of 1955, big songs, movies, celebrities. Well, thanks to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and Walmart, you can get your FBI file included in your birthday card. Your card will show who you had dinner with last Tuesday, where you went for vacation last summer, who you texted last Saturday night, what movies you ordered last month from Netflix, along with the photos of who you sat with at McDonald's for coffee this morning. Your FBI file birthday cards from Homeland Security and Walmart. Live better, more transparent with Homeland Security and Walmart. Happy birthday. You're not getting older. You're getting safer. You'll never get tired of this, will you? We're Walmart and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security.
Well, it's been another long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. Charlie Johnson, a retired sports reporter for the Weekly Miracle, has been taken to the local insane hospital for checkups after sending several letters to the editor. They say it's just for observation. He was brought one morning by his niece and found himself the only inhabitant of a stark white locked ward. Nobody told him where to go. Where was the bathroom? Where was the toothpaste?
Well, for now, at least, I don't have to pee. Sank way down in the chair. So soft, so firm. Felt safe. Put the footrest up, reached to the floor out of habit for my Afghan all folded up and washed by June for me, and there was one there. Had a thick weave, the kind with no spaces to let the cold air through, just the way I like it. I unfolded it. For some reason, it felt yellow and red like mine. Huh. I really am crazy. Distinctly remember the thought crossing my mind. Like a fisherman casting his net, I tossed the yellow and red Afghan at my legs. It took a couple tries to get it over my toes. And it was big enough to tuck around my shoulders, under my chin. Now I'd really better not have to go. So I sat there. Stared into the dark till it wasn't so dark anymore. I really was not afraid for once. what reason, I don't know. But it had been a long time. At home, after June left, I had the radio or TV on usually most of the night. Began to make out shapes, directions, sounds, smells. I imagine I heard the cry of someone in the night, maybe being tortured by whips or by thoughts of having taken their child to the first day of school and now looking into the child's room, but there was no child at all. The screams came again. I could not tell if they were from the houses on the shore or the boat out there on the big lawn sea, this floating prison, insane asylum, lifeboat, timeout room, this resting place for tired minds. Or maybe I heard myself cry. When I wrote all those letters to the editor about how it would cost too much to build another school, how the hippies were ruining America, they never sent me out here. My friends smiled at me when I came to Dan's for coffee. When I wrote about the war in Iraq and called Bush a stupid idiot and Obama a stealthy snake, nobody remembered to save my regular chair. When I said that Barack Obama was a nut if he thought we really believed Bin Laden was buried at sea, well, I could almost hear them backing up the paddy wagon to the cafe front door. When I was in school, Catholic school, St. Mark's, they told us, thou shalt not kill. They told us a lot of things. Then when you go out those side doors and take them seriously, they say, hey, wait a minute. Be realistic. You ever ask for directions in a small town in Nebraska? Always the same. Guy will smile and tell you you can't miss it. If you pass the Dairy Queen, you've gone too far. If you're sitting in a mental health institution at night by yourself in the pitch dark with a yellow and red afghan over your knees, I suppose you might have gone too far. You know all those sayings you hear every day? Blah, blah, blah. You're crazy, man. You going there, you're crazy. You doing that, and you're crazy. You know that I like strawberry syrup on a candy bar, taco sauce over cooked cabbage? That's crazy. All these things we can't do, or we're crazy. I must have done quite a few. This was after I quit the paper. I wrote a letter to the editor Sunday afternoon. Dear editor, I have a neighbor across the street. We've watched each other out our front windows for 40 years. Their son played ball in our yard. Last week that son's boy came home in a body bag in a box in the belly of a big plane back from Baghdad. Nothing to be joking about. I won't be quiet either. Talked to my neighbor since then on the sidewalk in front of the house. Again on the side steps to St. Mark's after Mass. They say Timothy died because he loved freedom. That's nonsense. He loved basketball. They say he had his head blown off his shoulders, his legs cut off at the knees, lost his hands in order to make us free. Of course, that's not true. But what else do a heartbroken grandmother and grandfather have to hold on to? Well, somebody needs to speak for Timothy. Perhaps speak to him. Tell him the truth. Because we lied to him his whole life. Timothy died because of us. Me. You. We told him it was good to go. Father Cyril, either by his legendary silence or the flag next to the altar, that it was good to go kill children and call that fighting for freedom. She never met Timothy, but Cindy Sampson, our new editor from Wayne State, told him the same thing by the story she ran the headlines, the photos, the editorials. So patriotic, so deceptive, so self-serving. We all told him, go, go, it's a good thing to do. We whispered, go kill, go shoot, go murder and steal. We'll all call it fighting for freedom. When we hear somewhere later, maybe whispered in the confessional, after thousands and thousands have died, that there was no reason to die. We'll dig our heels in the front lawn grass and call it fighting for freedom. When our own grandchildren hit the ball into the graveyard and come back and ask us about the headstone with the flag on it, and the same last name as theirs, who was that? We'll bite our tongues and clench our fists and look anywhere but into their trusting eyes, and we'll tell them that Timothy died fighting for our freedom.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average.
And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for listening. We hope you'll be back next week, same time, same place. We'd like to thank WorldNewsTrust.com for continuing to host our website. And we'd like to invite each of you to visit our website and take a click over to the crowdfunding site and throw us a little something to help us keep this show going. We really appreciate anything you can do. But most of all, we want you to come back and listen. That's what we're here for. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Daniel Lewin. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Oh.